Hey guys, Blake Templeton here. I've got an exciting interview for you with the number one syndication attorney in the country. We're going to be talking through how to protect your investments in 2020 from a legal perspective.
It's time to stop trusting the public markets and look to history's first trillionaire on how to build real, lasting wealth. Look, over the past 14 years, we've applied these exact principles in more than 300 plus transactions. Not one single investor has lost money. That trillionaire was King Solomon. We'll be sharing his wisdom on how to build wealth in a way that's translated for the 21st century investor. My name is Blake Templeton, and this is the Solomon Investor Podcast. Here to help you protect your money, but I've got a special guest who's going to help you protect it legally. Mauricio Rauld, founder and CEO of Premier Law Group. He's actually my attorney. 20 years of securities experience, and he actually is the one who I would say is the premier syndication attorney in the country. Mauricio, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Blake. I really appreciate it and looking forward to talking to you.
I love talking about the syndication side. A lot of our investors don't get to see that side. They don't get to see behind the scenes. And you know, you and I have been working together, what, 3-4 years, something like that?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
done lots of deals together. And one thing that I can always say about you is that you're always consistent in what you do. Not only do you love what you do, but you know your stuff. And I can't say that about all syndication attorneys.
Yeah, that's actually a lot of fun. I've gotten to the point now in my career, you know, doing this 20 years now, is that, you know, I know the stuff. Like, I know the rules. I know the law. It's in the back of my mind here, a little bag of where I've got it. So I don't have to worry about knowing what the answer is, which is, I think, if you don't do this full time and you just kind of dabble in it, that's what happens. You got to go look it up or you're not quite sure. I've gotten past that. And what's cool about that is that now I get to really kind of be creative and really work with the clients on structuring. And if the client has some, you know, an idea that they want to do, I don't have to go look it up. We can literally have a conversation about strategy, which is the fun part of all this. You know, the fun part is putting these deals together and can we do this? Can we do that? You know, and as I usually say, you know, as long as we're disclosing everything to our investors, or in this case, your investors, we can be pretty creative, because at the end of the day, our job is to make sure that we put together the best package for our investors, because at the end of the day, that's really who we're trying to help, is we're trying to get those investors to invest with us so we can all gain together in this wonderful world of real estate.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, the majority of people nationwide, if they were thinking about investments, you know, they'd call it the public market, a stock market, stocks, bonds, you know, mutual funds, ETFs. And what we're seeing is a massive influx of people moving into the private market, into commercial real estate. And, you know, and I'm sure you're seeing from the investor side of individuals that the people you're creating paperwork just like us, we're seeing that specifically people don't understand how regulated and how tight and how black and white the actual behind the scenes processes. I mean, I had a guy the other day just tell me, you know, isn't the private market, isn't real estate, isn't going in that world, isn't it kind of like the Wild Wild West? Like, you just kind of shake hands,
you know, right?
The actual paperwork.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what we do is, my goal is to help people better understand how we protect their investments. And this is a kind of a fun podcast show for us, because now we're kind of flipping the script. And I would love to show them how you help protect their investments. And so, I mean, we protect their investments, as you guys know, through, you know, collateralizing your principal. So you put your money into the tangible and it collateralizes your principal. We protect your investments by controlling the assets. On the public market, you can't control the stock market, but we control the actual asset. So we drive traffic, we can lower expenses, we can raise rents. We actually can control the vehicle. And so on the, now we're going to flip it. And Mauricio, share a little bit about how you, behind the scenes, all the stuff we do before we even have the investment, and how that helps protect their investment.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we do to protect investors, just start to the beginning with the structure, right? I mean, the way we put these investments together, typically using entity structuring and really segregating the liability. So just from an exposure standpoint, to the extent something were to happen, let's say you're buying a building and something were to happen to that building, well, you're not going to be personally liable or personally responsible for anything that happened in that particular investment. Similarly, I guess if you own a stock, right, if you own Apple stock or Microsoft and something were to happen to Microsoft, they're not going to be coming after you. So we do the same thing in the private market where we structure things in such a way that we make the investors, as you probably heard the term, a limited partner. And that essentially, when I says limited, it means two things. Number one, yes, they're limited in the sort of the decision-making and sort of day-to-day activity. But more importantly, the reason they're limited there is because they're also limited on the exposure. They have limited liability. Essentially, the maximum exposure they have is really the amount of investment they make versus the sponsor like yourself. Many times you're the ones that are really kind of absorbing all that risk because you're signing on the loan or, you know, you're the general partner and you're responsible. So just from a structural standpoint, we help out the passive investors that way. And then of course, from a regulatory standpoint, what I really do, my job, let's just boil it down to its essence. My job is to make sure that we create documents, disclosure documents that disclose all of the potential risks and benefits, obviously, but primarily on my end, what are the potential risks of the investment that Blake is putting together so that the investor can review those and make an intelligent decision whether this is a good investment for their particular scenario or not. It's not like we're, you know, here's an investment, just give us 50 grand or 100 grand or 200 grand and we won't tell you all the skeletons in the closet. Right. The idea is that we disclose everything so that you go in there with an open mind and you can make your own decision whether this is an appropriate investment in your portfolio or not.
Yeah, that's a really good distinction. You know, as a Solomon investor, we process through mental frameworks, and three of them to be exact, being God-directed. You've got to have wisdom. And Mauricio, from the behind the scenes, you actually help us have wisdom, you know, ensuring compliance on all the federal and state security laws and actually making sure, you know, what's the upside? You do actually look at that, but what's the downside and can we live with the downside? If there could be a downside, what is it and how do we actually protect the investors? I really appreciate that, you know, because that's not our wheelhouse. Our wheelhouse is to actually the collateral of the property, the actual tangible. Does it cash flow? How do you make it have revenue? How do we actually create ROI?
Right.
And so you really help us from behind the scenes actually create something that actually is safe on all sides. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, because one of the issues that pops up, and I literally had this, I'll share a sort of a more, maybe a little bit of a personal story, but I had a cousin, one of my cousins who owns a business, and he was going out to raise capital for his business. It's got nothing to do with real estate, but he's looking for some seed money. I think it's like $1 million, I think it was, or something around that mark. And he just put together or hired a regular attorney, was going to just put together an operating agreement and let's go do this. And somehow it came on my radar because he wanted me to take a look at it, just kind of whatever, giving it once over. And long story short, they're selling securities, right? They're supposed to be complying with all these federal rules and state rules. And they didn't have the foggiest idea. And the attorney, which isn't uncommon, the attorney was a business lawyer and they're not a securities lawyer. It's no different than when you go to the doctor and you go see your general practitioner. Well, that person's not a cardiologist and the cardiologist is not a gastroenterologist or whatever. Everybody has their specialty. So the attorney didn't know. And so that happens a lot. And so what the problem there is that the investors, the passive investors, will simply receive a little package, usually a very glossy brochure that basically focuses on all the good stuff from the investment, right? Hey, you give us 100 grand, you're going to own X percentage of the company. Here are all the numbers. Here's all the money we're going to make next year and the next year and the next. These are all your returns. But there was nothing in there that first of all, provided all the information about how the returns were being generated and the fact that really they were kind of making it up because they were just kind of wild guesses. But more importantly, none of the risks were disclosed in those documentation. And that tends to happen a lot, which is usually a good red flag for any passive investor. When they start receiving investment materials that don't contain the proper disclosure documents, and the key document is this PPM, this private placement memorandum. If you come across investments that don't have a PPM, you start asking questions and they come up with like, well, we don't need one, or I don't know what you're talking about or whatever. That's usually a red flag that they're not working with an attorney and they really don't know what they're doing. Or maybe they're just cutting corners, which is not a good thing, because if they're cutting corners here, where else are they cutting corners on the investment?
That's a great point. That's a really, really great point, because everything in the private market is not equal. And that's why you've got to actually have what we call three-dimensional investment. It's got to be God-directed. It's got to actually have the wisdom behind it to set it up correctly. It's got to then have collateral. So who's ever running, who's ever the Solomon general, you've got to actually control the domain. And then it's got to actually create the cash flow. It's got to create the actual appreciation. And that's all got to be done now with the structure, the foundation of the right paperwork. And so let's walk through that a little bit. You can talk about the PPM, the private placement memorandum, for our investor, for our investors who are listeners. You guys know it's the stuff that you guys sign. For our listeners who are not quite there yet and you're ready to jump in, let's break down what are those pieces of the PPM and what are they actually signing?
Yeah, so the PPM is the disclosure document. It's a document that shows you all the ways your investment can go wrong, all the good things, all the bad things. I always like to analogize it to the medical, again, I like the medical field for some reason, the medical consent form, right? If you guys ever have surgery, I just literally a couple months ago, or maybe more than a couple months out, I always have to get teeth removed for some reason. I have horrible teeth. So I have my oral surgery. I go to a surgeon, they put me under and they take the wisdom teeth out. They pull this, whatever they do. And even when I've had the surgeries, they give you that yellow piece of paper, that medical consent form, right? And
right.
All the ways your surgery can go wrong, and even though they're just pulling out teeth, I could have some bleeding, an infection, I could die from this 3-minute procedure, right? It's obviously very unlikely, but it's all those risks are disclosed in that medical consent form. It's the exact same thing. That's what the PPM is for. It goes through all the worst case scenarios that you could even, that the attorney can even think of. I'm like, Blake, how could you lose? What are all the possible ways you could lose? What crazy stuff could happen, including like a COVID kind of type thing? I mean, most people wouldn't have thought of a global pandemic as a potential thing. Right. But now if you look at documentation, I guarantee you, you're going to see disclosures about the global pandemic of COVID. But even if it's unlikely, we want to make sure that the investor understands all the potential, no matter how small that risk is. If the risk exists, we want to make sure it's there. We also want to make sure that we're explaining certain things. If we make certain representations of things that could happen or we expect to happen, we need to make sure that we're fully explaining all the assumptions and that, all that stuff. So that's in general what the PPM is. And it typically has several parts. And so the PPM typically includes that main disclosure document. And then it has a bunch of exhibits or attachments. One of them being the operating agreement, for example, which is the operating agreement, which is the governing document over the actual entity. So you're most likely investing in you're not investing in a stock like you would at Microsoft, a corporation. You're likely investing in a limited liability company, an LLC. And that has an operating agreement that shows you how the company is going to be governed, who has the voting rights, what are the percentage returns, who owns what, are there any special allocations, are you getting a preferred return, all the waterfalls, all the information. If there's ever a question about, well, what do we do in this situation, you're going to go to this particular document that's going to show you, give you the answer to the question that you have about this particular entity. There's subscription agreements, which is actually a document that officially subscribes you to the offering. That's where you're going to actually say, I want to invest X amount of dollars, buy a certain amount of units, and here's my social security number, my EIN, and all my information. And then there's a questionnaire, an investor questionnaire, because depending on the investment, there might be some limitations as to the type of investors that can be participating, or even if everybody's allowed in the deal, you may be limited to the amount of people that can come in. So for example, you may have a deal that allows you to have non-accredited investors, for example, but you're limited to 35. So we've got to make sure we're keeping track of that. So that's what the investment, the questionnaire is for. And then usually your business plan is part of that PPM as well. So the business plan is kind of the nice marketing, the pitch deck or the brochure or whatever you want to call it, the prospectus that has all the pretty pictures and the graphs and the story and all that pretty stuff. That's usually the last exhibit. So you end up with a PPM that's, we don't print them out anymore, but they're quite lengthy and surely cure insomnia if you have to go read the 100 pages or so that this PPM is at the end of the day.
Hey, thank you for sharing that. It's important. It's kind of tongue in cheek. It's big, but that's what we're missing in the public market.
Right.
I mean, that's what people are missing. You go on Robinhood app and you just sign up and you just put your money in, or the average mutual fund has 17 different fees that literally are hidden in prospectus that aren't actually given to the person. and that you might be able to go find on the stock in some back behind hidden page on their domain. So
That's a great point, Blake, because one of the major things that we focus on is the compensation piece. So we, of all the disclosures we make, the one I tend to focus on the most is that compensation model. And we want to make sure we're disclosing not only all the fees, which look, everybody's entitled to fees, everybody working hard and to making the generating the return for everyone. But we disclose all the direct fees, but more importantly, also any of the indirect fees, which are fine. It doesn't mean that they're not earned, but they may not be easily seen. Right. For example, I'll give you a great example. There's nothing wrong with if you're buying a piece of property and you also happen to be a broker, a real estate broker, and you want to take your usual real estate commission on that transaction, nothing wrong with that, but that's something you would have to disclose. When you look at these prospectuses of a lot of these mutual funds, they'll disclose the fees that you typically understand. Oh, it's a 2% fee or whatever the load is, but a lot of those fees are hidden and they're kind of siphoned off from your return. So even though it's like the gambling rules. Like they actually make the money when you make money, because instead of you should be making 10%, but because of all these kind of hidden fees in the background, you end up making 7%. And you may think, hey, 7%, not too bad, but you should have made 10, or maybe you should have made 20 and you got 15. You're thinking things are going well, but those hidden fees that aren't explicitly disclosed or articulated as they are in a private, like in a private placement memorandum, where we'd be crystal clear all the direct and indirect fees.
And that's why people in the public market are actually losing money no matter what. You're always losing. If the market's making money, you're losing money. If the market's making money, you're losing money. But if the market's losing money, you're losing money. And so that is such a valuable piece, because that's why people in the private market can exponentially grow their actual return, because they set a hedge in the beginning. They know exactly what they're getting into. They know exactly what's happening in the investment, and they literally can multiply their investments because they know what the fees are, and there's no fees that are just being siphoned out of the actual return.
Blake, I never share this many personal stories, but you know, I got my mother out of the stock market with her retirement funds, I think 10 years ago now or 8 years ago. And at some point I realized that was when, you know, right after the big crash, the Great Recession, he had this really high numbers. I think the S&P 1 year was up 20%. I mean, there was like some major gains because it had collapsed down to nothing. But I was looking at my mom's statements and they weren't, I was expecting, well, the market just went up 20%. I would expect them, there's going to be some fees. I understand that. But her returns were like 8%. So when the stock market was doing 20, she was making 8. She thought if she was doing okay, because, hey, I got 8% return. I'm like, the market just did 20. Where's that other 12?
Wow.
And that's all part of those hidden churning fees and everything. So I got her out of there, and now I've got her in the private markets as well.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I guess let's talk a little bit more about kind of massaging why it's safe. We've got some people who, they know they're losing money in the public market. They actually know they're losing. I was talking to a person the other day, and they're like I've never gone back and looked at my return. And I actually went back and looked at it. In the last 10 years, I've actually made 7% after 08 and COVID put together, only 7% broken between 10 years, but they don't know there's another way. And then you have another group of people who would call Solomon investors who say, there's got to be another way. I mean, there's just got to be another way. What other examples, maybe some history or some other stories of why the private market is safe? I mean, this is your world. This is your wheelhouse. And so 20 years, you know, ensuring the federal and state securities are actually withheld, seeing investors, having people invest over and over and over again in the private market. What are their stories or thoughts you have on how it's safe?
Look, first of all, I want to be clear. I mean, all investments have some degree of risk, right? So we're really more comparing, you know, what are the risks, the risks of the public markets versus the private. Even though the perception, I think, is that the private sometimes are somehow riskier or what have you. But I think personally, I think that's just because, you know, everybody with a financial interest, like your stockbroker or the financial advisor, they don't get paid when you go buy a private deal. They only get paid when you invest in their mutual funds.
Right.
One of the nice things, one of the big advantages of the private market is you actually have access to the sponsors, to the team, right? You know, whoever's putting this deal together, if you have some, you know, especially when you're making the decision to invest, I mean, you can pick up the phone. In fact, you're encouraged to, and it's actually a requirement that you make yourself available to answer questions about the particular investment. You don't get that when you buy, you know, Microsoft or Apple. You don't get to call up Steve Jobs when he's not around anymore, but Tim Cook, and be like, hey, Tim, you know, what's going on here? I was looking at your financials and it seems like this, that, the other, like what happened here? What happened there? Right. You don't get that, right? So it's nice to have, you know, access to the sponsor team on a particular investment. And so I think the understanding of what the particular investment is much clearer in the types of deals that we do. And really for the passive investor, the main thing they need to do, in my opinion, to minimize the risk for them is really just the due diligence on the sponsor team, right? I mean, because that's at the end of the day what you're investing in. You're investing in the team. You just want to make sure they're able to execute on this plan, because it's one thing to put all these pretty brochures together, but somebody's got to have the experience to actually go out there and execute it. But that's really, once you figure out what the team is, and again, you can have conversations with them. You can have, you know, you can go out and have a cup of coffee with some of the team members and get comfortable with them and really vet them. And then obviously you can look at their experience and their track record. And you can see, look, they specialize in this. I've met with them. Again, you don't get that in the private in the public market. You're not going to have access to the fund managers and, you know, picking up the phone and figuring out what their criteria is or why they're doing certain things. That type of environment, I think, makes things a lot easier. That ability for you to pick up the phone and talk to somebody about the investment prior to making it and then getting updated throughout the life cycles I think it mitigates a lot of the risk, because you have a better idea if you ask the right questions of what you actually are getting into.
Yeah, it's a really great point. It's the mindset of looking at people as people versus a number on a screen and just processing those numbers. Before I forget, guys, if you have not received access to our back end of all of our deals and seeing how the deals work and seeing how to actually activate and protect and cash flow your investments, pull out your cell phone right now and text 31996 in the word Solomon. So you're going to actually text the word Solomon and in the actual number 31996, and that'll begin that conversation. I've also got a book coming out called The Solomon Way, and then I want to give you that book for free and have you just pay shipping. And so this will begin this relationship. We got so many more items to give you. So again, 31996 and text the word Solomon. I really enjoy this time because this is really what some investors need. We've got some people who are just like, man, I just need to know, like, my I's dotted, my T's crossed. I just got to see a little bit deeper behind the curtain. And so, you know, this is really good.
Can I point out one real quick thing? Because when you just said that, it just made another thing to keep in mind.
Yeah.
You know, these are really regulated industries, right? So the SEC is involved and also your state regulators involved. And depending on what you pick, you can talk about these things on podcasts and you know, on social media, and sometimes you can't. And so just to be clear here, you know, you and I are having these conversations because we rely on these regulations that do allow us to actually talk about them, you know, openly and not sort of really on the private thing. So that's another thing to keep in mind, is that not all syndications are created equally. And you just want to be aware when you're approached by someone that they're doing it in compliance with federal and state rules.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I see that right now, all over the place, people just doing their thing, thinking they can just do their thing. And that would literally be like in the stock world, before you're publicly traded, if you just start selling shares of something and just start publicizing that everywhere. You know, we go in, Mauricio, together, sometimes 6, sometimes 8, 12 months, sometimes before an investment, you know, you and I
build sure.
structure.
Right.
And that's why it's so important that you actually, whoever that Solomon General is, whoever that is, who's actually managing your investments and actually helping you build wealth, you've got to actually have one, you've got to have a, someone who actually knows the securities, who's actually working with the Solomon General, and that Solomon General actually following those securities, like he's saying. So that, as Mauricio mentioned, we actually can set up a structure so that we can talk about it freely. And then if it's an investment that we've set up where we can't talk about it freely, then we know which direction we need to go with that.
Right.
You know, the private market, for some, we truly talk about this new ecosystem because it's this epiphany. I've been in the public market for so long, I didn't know it existed. But the truth is, I mean, this has been around for, I mean, as long as you and I, you know, added together have been around, and it is a normal way of business. And it's really something that was only available to the uber wealthy. It was something that the institutional investors, the large offices, you know, family offices could invest into. And the documents in which you provide, you actually put together for us, allow us to engage, you know, the masses to allow them to invest into big deals and make larger returns.
Yeah, you're right. This has always been out there. I think what's happened recently, you know, in 2013, there was a Jobs Act that was passed after the last Great Recession. And there was a lot of, you know, if you can imagine, after the last recession, there was a lot of capital constraint. And so the Congress wanted to sort of expand this private market. And so they came out with this Jobs Act in 2012. And then in 2013, these new rules came out. And what happened after these new rules is that a lot of people started to be able to, were allowed to advertise or talk freely about the investments they made. So that's one of the reasons you're starting, most likely over the past 7 years, you've just been hearing more and more about these investments. Now, interestingly enough, a lot of those investments technically aren't eligible for all of this advertising because they're still relying on old rules, but it kind of all got swept in. And I think that's the perception, is that, oh, this is a relatively new type of investments. It's only been happening for the last 5 or 10 years, when in reality, it's been going on for a long, long time. I mean, actually, these Securities Acts are from 1933 and 1934. So they've been around for a while, and they're heavily regulated. And that's why, you know, fortunately for me and unfortunately for my clients, there's a high compliance cost because they've got to hire an attorney. Just like when you're doing your tax returns and you're trying to hire, you know, you're trying to navigate the complex world of taxes. It's so complicated now that you've got to hire a really good tax professional who can do some tax planning for you and save you some tax money. The same thing happens in this regulatory world. You're kind of forced to hire a securities lawyer to make sure you're navigating the rules legally and avoiding all the landmines, not only at the federal level, but also at the state levels.
Yeah, it's so true. If you want to play in the actual private market, you've just got to know what you're doing. And you know, this type of podcast with someone like Mauricio, again, 20 years of securities experience, you know, truly a premier syndication attorney in the country. You're not gonna get any better meat, you know, off the bone than this right here. So Mauricio, I really enjoyed this time with you. Anything else that you'd like to share with the investors? Maybe something motivational in the private market, something along those lines?
I think everybody should be, I'm glad you're bringing this to everybody's attention, because it is something that isn't necessarily talked about in the mainstream necessarily, but it's been there for a long time. And it's just something that I think everybody should at least take a look at it. And if you've been around long enough, you start realizing that you just kind of entirely play in the private market, because you just look at the public and you see how volatile and how manipulated and how kind of crazy it is. Look at it right now, that the private market just seems to make better sense. And now it's being opened up to more and more people. And so it's become more accessible than ever before.
Mauricio, I've enjoyed it, my man. I'll have to do it again soon. Blessings on you guys. This is a Solomon Investor Podcast, signing off to your success.
All right, listen, I got to level with you. We've all seen the bubble burst over and over again. 1929, 1987, 2000, 2008, and now 2020. The fallacy of the stock markets continue to be exposed before our very eyes. And no matter where you're at right now, no matter where you're at in the markets, it's time to take action and escape the trap. You must activate and protect your net worth. Your net worth must cash flow, and we want to help you do that. So do this. Text the word Solomon to 31996, and you will get instant access to the step-by-step training guide every Solomon investor uses to get started. It's chock full of current wealth principles, financial facts, case studies, and the frameworks of King Solomon translated for the 21st century investor. Again, text Solomon to 31996.